You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and I'm the host of the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. I'll also be your host into the world of hunting the icon of North American wilderness, the bear. We'll talk about tactics, gear, conservation, but we'll also bring you into some of the wildest country on the planet chasing bear. This is a very special episode of the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast that I doubt that I will ever be able to replicate with another guest. I had the opportunity to sit down with Ori Lee Province of Crawford County, Arkansas. Ori is 91 years old. His name is Ora Lee Province, but he goes by Ori. I got to sit down with Ori. I've known Ori for about 10 years or so, and I was introduced to him because of the legend that he was in the region that he deer hunts, because of some deer that he killed back in the 1960s. And so I went and did a story for a regional Arkansas hunting magazine about Ori Province and the two big bucks that he killed in 1965 on public land in the rugged Ozark Mountains. Ori is a unique man today because of the life that he's lived. Ori was born in 1927, back in the same hollow that he still lives in. And basically, he's lived off the land his whole life, from logging to chicken farming to growing tomatoes. Ori has managed to never have to get a job in town except for a short time in 1954. Ori is an old school human, and I really have just a special place in my heart for guys like him. I think growing up in Arkansas, I don't know if it was my dad or if it was, I believe it was a combination of things, but my dad definitely had a lot of respect for these old mountain men. And so I just had a respect for these caliber of men. And so I went and just had a conversation with Ori that you're going to enjoy. I think the context will help you understand Ori. The Ozarks, anthropologists say, were culturally and geographically isolated until the 1970s, when infrastructure and technology really reached this rugged part of Arkansas. The Ozark Mountains are an uplifted plateau that basically cover an area that's probably, I don't know how many square miles it is, but probably 100 miles north and south by probably 300 miles east and west. And the infrastructure, the highway infrastructure of the Ozarks was, there were no interstates, there was no major commerce in the region. And basically, it was a culturally and geographically isolated region, and still is to some degree today. And Ori, they got electricity in 1948, he told me. That's not on the podcast. They didn't get telephones back in there until the 1970s. And to this day, they still don't even have rural water where he lives. They live off wells. And for the amount of wilderness that we have in Arkansas, he lives back about as far as you can get. For Arkansas, he lives back in some of the most rugged, steep, bluffy, rocky, roughest places that we have. And Ori still lives back in there with his wife. And you're going to enjoy this conversation with my friend, Ori Lee Province. As a side note, we never specified how big these deer were that Ori killed. We talk about them, and you'll see pictures of them on the posts about this podcast. But the first deer that Ori killed scored 165 inches. I scored that deer myself. The second deer has double drop tines and scored 186 gross inches. So for the Ozarks, those are incredible deer if they were killed today. And in 1965, deer like that in this region of the country were basically unheard of. Guys, I'm going to do you a favor and you can do me a favor. Check out a subscription to Bear Hunting Magazine at our website, bear-hunting.com, and use the promo code BHM5. That's BHM5 for $5 off a new subscription on checkout. What?
I thought I found an arrowhead.
Oh, you may have. Out here. Hey!
Come in.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine, I guess.
Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you.
Hello, Miss Mary. How are you?
Hi there.
This is my youngest son, Shepherd. I don't think he's ever been over here before.
No, I don't ever have seen him before. Come around and have a seat here.
How are y'all doing?
Doing pretty good. Excuse the floor. I was in the middle of vacuuming, but I ain't not got all done, so don't worry about the house.
Oh, this is great. This is great.
Just have a seat there.
Hey, that's your chair.
I know. I'm right here. It's mine.
Okay.
I'm rolling this one.
Well, do you know what a podcast is?
A what?
A podcast.
Yes, I do.
So what I wanted to do today is just record a podcast, which all a podcast is it's like a radio show, but it's on the internet, and it's not live, so everything we do, I mean, I'll put it up later after I edit it and stuff. Have you ever heard of a podcast, Miss Mary?
Well, my brother has talked about stuff. He's quite a radio man. He's talked about stuff like that, but...
Yeah.
We don't have, I don't know what you use it.
Well, people listen to it on their phones.
Oh, yeah.
No, I just wanted to kind of get a general kind of life story of you and kind of living out here in the Ozarks.
Yeah.
And also I wanted to talk to you about those big bucks that you killed back in, I guess, 1965.
That's right.
But kind of to hear, too, about some of your earliest memories of hunting and how hunting culture of this region, you know, kind of how you grew up hunting and what you grew up doing. But I'll ask you kind of some specific questions that'll kind of lead you in, and then we'll just have a conversation.
Yeah, okay.
But now go ahead and tell me when you were born and kind of just about your childhood. You were talking to me about how your dad had chores set out for all the kids and what you had to do. So when were you born, and what was your childhood like?
Well, I was born June the 10th, 1927.
Mm.
And I grew up, and we moved from the mountain down to across the hollow here from where I live in 29. And then I went to school 2 weeks at Winfrey.
Now, yeah. where you were born, right here close somewhere?
I was born up on the mountain here, about a mile and a half.
Okay.
From where I'm at.
So you weren't born in a hospital?
No. They wasn't one of us 11 children born in the hospital.
And so you were born up here, and then
we moved down here in 29. Then we moved back to the mountain. I went to school down here at Winfrey 2 weeks, and we went back to the old home place. That was my mother's dad's place. He homesteaded it from the United States government.
Mm.
And I've still got the deed.
Is that right?
Yep.
Now, what year did he homestead it?
I can't recall right off, but...
Would have been in the mid-1800s, probably?
It was in the 1800s sometime.
Now, were your grandparents alive? Were they a part of your life as you were a kid?
No.
Okay.
Just my grandmother's all.
Yeah. You know, part of, to me, when I think about, you know, here it is 2019. You were born in 1927. So how old are you? Does that make you 91?
I'm 91. I'll be 92 in June.
Okay. So if you think of, you know, thinking of someone that lived in the 1800s seems so long ago, but you knew people that were born in the 1800s. I mean, the mid-1800s. I mean, like, your grandparents would have been... born in the, I don't know when.
I think, I'm not too sure, but I believe my grandmother was born in 18 and it's either 30-something or 50-something.
Huh. So she was born maybe even in the 1850s.
You can figure it out. She died in 1935.
Okay.
And she was 81 when she died.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so probably the 1850s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So you think about the changes in lifestyle and technology from when your grandmother, a woman that you knew, and to now. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, even the lifespan, I mean, there's no humans that have really, in the history of humanity, that really have experienced that kind of development in technology, you know?
Right.
Incredible.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had 5 brothers and 5 sisters.
So 11 kids.
Right. And the oldest one died, but that would have made 12. 3 younger than me.
Okay, okay. So you were towards the end there.
Yeah, right.
And now you told me your dad had chores set out for you guys that you had to do. Tell me about that.
Well, when I was just a small like boy, I was about 9 years old or something like that. I'd always get up more than build a fire. And had it going. And then I went and fed the team. And
mules.
Mules, yeah.
Yeah.
And harnessed them.
Yeah.
And come back in 1936. I was 9 years old. 1936. We got our first radio.
First radio.
First radio, and I'd listen to the old Red and Ricardo family and Bill Monroe and Charlie Monroe. They was together back then.
Yeah.
And some of them old singers way back there.
Yeah.
A bunch of them.
That was a big deal, listening to those old radio programs.
They was good. They was good.
Yeah.
I like to listen at them yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what was your dad using the team of mules for?
Well, we worked in timber. That's how we made her.
Worked in timber.
We worked in timber and farmed a little.
Okay.
We had 7 or 8 or 10 cows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was hauling logs off the mountain with these mules.
Oh, yeah. Right. Skidding them and everything.
I'll be darned.
Yep.
So you grew up doing that.
That's what I've done all of my life. Just about it. Except later years, why I was going chickens.
Yeah. So why did they use mules rather than horses for doing that? Do you know?
Well, they're more sure-footed.
Yeah.
And I don't know, but of course they use horses too.
Right.
But mostly mules.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your dad was a logger, I mean, back in these mountains right here.
Yeah. Making cross ties, hewing cross ties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be darned. Now, where was the mill? Was it down where it is now?
No, down the other side here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So load up the cross ties on a wagon, or load up the just raw logs on a wagon, take them down to the mill?
They done the saw logs that way, and they sawed fellers and spokes and all that stuff, you know, that, of course, that there was no wagon wheels, you know, and a lot of them sold to Springfield Wagon Company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, and
now, when did y'all start getting more modern logging equipment? Like, you were a logger most of your life.
Well, that was up in about 60.
In the 1960s, you started using mechanized equipment for hauling logs?
Right.
Really?
Trucks and things, you know.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
So you were using mules and horses and everything until the 1960s?
I scared a man near a log, but the horse and mules.
Yeah. What kind of saws did you use? Like the 2-man?
Crosscut saws.
Crosscut saws. Do you have any of that old stuff still laying around?
Yeah.
Do you really?
Yeah, I've got one up here, 2 up here.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd like to see those.
All right.
So what were your, give me just a little, like kind of a bigger glimpse of your life. So born in 1927, dad was a logger. And you grew up, you stepped right into the family business and just logged right with him.
Yeah.
And And then, so you did that until when, and what other kind of occupations did you have?
Well, my dad died in 44, but
okay.
In 41, while the World War II broke out, and my brothers, three of them, went in service.
Okay.
And I was the oldest one left at home.
Okay.
And I took care of my mother and my nephew and two sisters and a brother.
Hmm.
Yep.
So you were just a few years too young to be drafted into the war.
I was. I was when my dad died, I was 16.
Okay.
And when I become 18, the day I was 18, the day after I was 18, my birthday come on Sunday that year. On Monday, I registered, and I went down and passed examination. 8th day of July, I got my call for examination, went down and passed, and 8th day of August, got my call for service. And a minister's out here, and I had a big tomato crop out, about 10 acres of tomatoes, and me and the family did. We had to have something to live on. And but anyway, while there's a minister out there, he said, this boy needs to take care of his mother and these children.
Mm.
And so he wrote, I got deferred until till October the 15th. And in other words, till the crop was over.
Yeah.
Then I still got my 1A classification. But the war was over at that time.
Oh, wow. So you just barely missed it.
I just barely missed
it. So what year would that have been? 1944?
Well, let's see. It'd been about 47.
Well, I can't do the math.
47, I believe, or something.
Okay,
like that.
Okay. 40. That would have been when World War II was over.
47, right, somewhere along there.
Yeah. I'll be darned.
46. It's over in 46, the war was.
Wow. So you would have gone if the war would have...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the boys that I went to school with, some of them, they was in there. They went to Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Yep.
Wow. So... So you logged up until how old were you? Well, you grew tomatoes. You did some farming. You had some cattle.
Well, I couldn't work in timber. That was the main line up till years and years later.
Yeah.
But anyway, I went and me and my brother, we that he never did have to go to war, and but me and him went and cut timber. And logged it. I hauled it on a wagon.
Yeah.
And he skidded it out, and I went and hauled it.
Mm.
And dumped it off at the mill.
Mm.
And that was, I forgot now what year that was. It's about in the late 40s anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the Great Depression, you were just a kid during
Great
Depression. These hills weren't really... I mean, they were affected by the Great Depression, but people were already poor.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't much you could do to somebody that was just living off the land, basically, when it comes to economic stress. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. But we lived off the land.
Yeah.
In 1936, that was a dry year, you know.
Okay.
And we had a tomato crop, and we hauled water and set them out, and they got up, and just the blooming and everything... Turned off dry, we never got a tomato.
Mm.
In 1936.
Wow.
And
that was hard to take.
Yeah. Anyway. I remember that well, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we worked in a timber, and, you know, the people back then, they finally got where they brought out food stamps and things, but we never got any. My dad just wouldn't have nothing to do with that.
Really? Just by principle?
That's right.
He didn't need any help.
We made it. We made it without it. We worked in timber and made it.
Yeah. What would have been a normal meal for your family back then when you were a kid?
Oh, had plenty to eat.
Yeah.
Had plenty to eat.
Yeah.
We had anything that.
Yeah.
Just about. We
canned. I guess you raised hogs and
we
canned
hogs.
Vegetables.
Yeah.
Had a garden. I know you still have a garden, don't you?
Well, yeah.
Or
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we made it fine.
Wow.
Done good.
Yeah.
I had about 30 swarms of bees back during the war while you couldn't get sugar. Food is all rationed. You couldn't buy nothing. Everybody's out of sugar, and I had bees, and we got to, you could get to, a permit to feed the bees, you know, because it used the honey some way or another in guns.
Is that right?
Powder, yeah. I don't know just what, but that's what I heard.
Huh.
Anyway. But
so you were selling honey?
Well, I didn't sell it, but we eat it.
Okay, you just had it.
Yeah, we had it, and we got plenty of sugar to feed the bees, and so we didn't have to run out of sugar. A lot of people never had no sugar, flour, anything. They couldn't give just so much.
Huh.
You couldn't buy a truck tire or nothing.
Really?
Not a pair of shoes, hardly.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, now what year did you get married?
49.
Okay. Now, what was the story? I remember with Miss Mary, she was from the town. She was from in town. Is that right?
Right. Yeah.
And so she didn't understand what it was like to be married to a country boy like you. Is that right? Tell me the story about when. Do you remember? I remember writing it about you that you went deer hunting. You told her when y'all were dating, I guess.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me that story.
Well, I went to, when deer season opened, well, I always go deer hunting, you know. And of course, I left her out of the picture. I just went ahead and hunted. But after I killed a deer, when I got my deer, I called her. And so that's kind of the way that went.
But she was, you wondered why he never called you, is that right? A week. So you thought maybe something was up, but he was just hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd walk 20, 25 miles a day.
Wow.
Hunting on bluffs. I hunted bluffs and roughest places it was.
Yeah. So tell me, now I want to start talking to you about hunting. What are your earliest memories of hunting? I mean, did you hunt when you were a little kid? Did your dad?
Oh, yeah. Man, my brother liked during the war, you know. Well, there wasn't no money much. Cross ties are selling 25 and 30 and 35 cents a piece.
Mm.
And you just couldn't make much in the timber. So when the season opened, we'd go hunting. We'd make more hunting, catching possums and coons. And we'd even skin a skunk. Anything that we could get a dollar out of.
Selling the hides.
Selling the hides, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you had tree dogs.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
We
had tree dogs. Yeah.
What kind of dogs did you have? Do you remember?
Well, there's hounds mostly.
Yeah. So you were making money selling hides back during that time.
Well.
Making more than you could make at the sawmill.
Right.
I'll be darned.
Yep.
You know, I've actually mentioned that on this podcast before because we've got coon dogs.
Yep.
And part of the reason a coon dog is so culturally iconic is because of back there was a time when you could make more money with if you had a good hound than you could at a day's work.
Yep.
I mean, yep.
Yep.
I'll be darned.
Yep.
So you did that as a kid. Now, there weren't many deer, though, back when you were a kid.
No deer at all.
None at all?
No, not hardly ever. I never seen a deer until I was 16.
Okay.
I never saw a deer until I was 16.
Wow. And no bears?
No, I didn't.
In those days, there weren't many bears around.
Well,
here.
There's a few around earlier than my time.
Right.
Yeah.
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 But I got my license. I think I still got my tag where I bought my first license.
Is that right? You still got it?
I've got one of the early ones.
Yeah. What year would it have been?
1916. No. Yeah. 1916.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now that.
Not 1916.
Yeah. Yeah.
Born in 1927.
It'd be 40, Yeah, 16 had been, 43.
Okay, you were 16 years old.
Yeah.
43, 1943. Okay,
yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you started, when did you kill your first deer? Do you remember?
Well, I was 17 when I killed my first deer.
Okay, so in the 40s.
Yeah.
And then you started, so how would you describe these mountains, Mr. Ori? There's people listening to this that have never been to Arkansas. They've never even, they might even think Arkansas is a flat place.
Yeah.
How would you describe these mountains?
Well, they're rough.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're beautiful.
Yeah.
And I've never been nowhere else.
Yeah.
Far west as I've been is Shamrock, Texas.
Mm.
And far south as I've been down around Warren, Arkansas,
mm.
and Fort North has been as Kansas City.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's Far East has been, which you'd have to go Little Rock.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah. Well.
I told him that a while ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, I would describe these mountains to somebody that's not been here is they're real bluffy, and I want to hear about the way that you hunted deer, but a lot of limestone, big limestone bluffs and rocky outcroppings. I mean, even driving here to your house today, we stopped at a waterfall down here on the corner.
Yeah.
And took a picture of a big waterfall coming off one of these bluffs and you know, oak forest, not many pines around here.
Well, not right through right here,
right.
But on this south officer, there is.
There's more pines.
Yeah, oh, yeah, right.
Did, since you've been alive, have these mountains looked about like this? Or can you recall a time when they were, I mean, you know, like the vegetation, I mean.
About the same.
Okay.
The same, yeah.
So you're cutting.
Only the, there are more fields and there's not as many people lives in here now as there used to be.
Right. Yeah, there used to be a lot of homesteads in this national forest.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're touching national forest here, aren't you?
Right, yeah.
Your
yeah.
property here.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, on the north side, I am.
Now, this place right here, was this homesteaded by some of your family?
No, I bought this from a fellow from Shawnee, Oklahoma.
Okay. So you bought this, but mm-hmm. your family homesteaded up on the mountain.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So you killed your first deer when you were 17 in the mid-40s.
Yeah.
And then describe to me kind of how you learned, how you started hunting these deer.
Well, ever since I was just a little boy, 9 years old, when I was 9 years old, we lived up here on the mountain. And it's about 2 miles of where my aunt lived down here. She raised my dad and my uncle and two uncles. And she raised them. But her husband died in 1928.
Mm.
And but anyway, my dad took care of her. And so every Sunday night, I'd come down this, it's about 2 miles a little over, down to her and spend the night with her when I was 9 years old. And I'd go back to the mountain then the next morning. And then Monday morning, I had to go to Bedford School, which I'd be walking better than 6 miles.
Mm.
And but anyway, I'd done that for 4 years.
Mm. Mm.
Until I was 13, she died in 1940.
Okay.
11th of May, 1940. Mm. I remember it well.
Wow.
Yeah.
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 And so you... Did you learn to hunt during that time? Because that was what I'd ask you. Yeah. Like, how were you?
Well, my dad had sent me down when one of my brothers was 14. Well, he bought him a 22. And a new 22, single shot 22. And anyway, we all used it. And but anyway, I was just a little boy, and they'd send me down here to check things down here, and they let me take a gun
so
with me.
So you'd hunt all the way?
I'd go down there, and I'd kill a squirrel when I was just with his oldest boy.
Yeah.
I had a gun with me, killed a squirrel.
Yeah, yeah. And then you started deer hunting these bluffs. You know, the story that I wrote about you.
It wasn't just bluffs, it was everywhere, just about.
Yeah, Yeah, yeah.
Because they had a game refuge over here they had, and it stayed. We had to hunt around it. But
you couldn't hunt there. They were trying to reintroduce deer.
That's right.
In the 40s.
Right.
So they brought in some deer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they brought them in, and they was getting where they kind of scattered out, then they opened the season on it.
Yeah. Yeah. But you, so I remember the story that I wrote about you years ago. I called it the Bluff Hunter.
Yeah.
I titled it that.
Yeah.
Because you used to like to stay on the top of these bluffs, and you can kind of look down and see these flats.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's where these deer would be. But if you were up on the bluff, you'd kind of be hid from them. Is that right?
Right. They can't smell you. You're above them, and they don't.
Yeah.
And so that way, you can get I've killed several laying down.
Okay, so you would just creep along the top of the bluff, and you'd see them bedded.
Yeah, right.
I'll be darned. Yeah. I remember you used to throw rocks off a bluff, too, sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes you'd wake them up. If you couldn't see, you'd throw something down there to kind of make a noise. So they was wondering what it was, and maybe didn't move where you could see them, if there's any there.
Yeah, yeah. Hey guys, we want to take a short intermission here at the middle of the podcast. And if you remember, Mr. Ori said that in 1936, his family got their first radio and that he loved listening to the original Carter Family music and Bill Monroe's music. We're going to take a minute. We're going to listen to Cotton Eye Joe by Bill Monroe. This is for you, Mr. Ori.
I'd have been married 40 years ago if I hadn't been knock-kneed Cotton Eye Joe. Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe? Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe? Say, my grandmammy, did you know chicken in the bread fence scratching out dough? Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe? Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Cornstalk fiddle and a shoestring bow, play a little tune called Cotton Eye Joe.
Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe? Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe?
Don't you remember, don't you know, Daddy worked a man called Cotton Eye Joe.
Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe? Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe?
Even if you don't like bluegrass music, surely you enjoyed that in this context. Hey, we're going to jump back into the episode, and Mr. Ori is going to tell us about the big bucks that he killed in 1965. In 1965, you killed two just big old deer, yeah. Tremendous deer, non-typical deer.
Yeah, right.
Do you recall the exact scenario of how you killed those deer?
Yeah, yeah.
Tell us that story.
Well, I was, my boy, he was 14 years old, and we went across Hurricane Creek over here and across on towards Rattlesnake Gap and down a point and got down on the end of the point where I left him on top of the hill. And I said, I'm going down yonder where them pines at and all them blows are at, and see if I can jump up something. And I was going climbing over a bluff, and I scared four deer out of a bed down below me, you know. Mm-hmm. They run off. And so I just eased on down the bluff and got down there and went on down, found their beds, went right through by it, went on down about 90 yards the other side of it, and I heard a racket behind me. And I looked around and I saw this 28-point buck coming. Mm. All I could see is this, you could kill one without, I think, a spike or...
He just needed to have horns.
I could see them horns, and I saw he had enough horns that he's legal to shoot, so I couldn't see nothing but just a spot between two trees. So I shot him in the flanks, and I thought, well, I'll cripple him. And so I shot him, and he come right through by me and run about, I think it's 93 yards, and he fell dead right over from me.
I'll be darned. Yeah. What did you think when you walked up to him and started counting those points?
Oh, boy. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I couldn't. I just left him there and went and got my boy.
Yeah.
And we went and...
Is it this boy that's...
Out here? Yeah.
Yep. That's yep. Loading hay for you right now.
Right. Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
He's 14 years old.
Now, how'd you get him out of there? I know about
where
that's
Well,
we
drug
at.
Him to the creek, on down the creek, and took him up the creek, because we couldn't take him up back up the bluff where I'd come from.
Okay.
No way I was doing to him.
Okay.
And her rig was sitting on top of the mountain, so had to go back up there and get it. But
yeah.
Anyway, I went and we took him down the creek and took him up the creek, and we run on to some hunters there, and a boy that... he had a Volkswagen, and he took us back to our rigs and hauled it up to where we could get it.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, but
and then you killed another one. Yeah. You killed another big one.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Was it a few years later, or when did you kill that
2 weeks later.
2 weeks later.
2 weeks later.
Yeah. I'll be darned. Same area?
No, it was back north here.
Okay.
It was up Frog Creek.
Okay. Yeah, that was just an incredible season.
Yeah, they're both in season.
Oh well, I'd say it was just an incredible year for you.
Oh yeah,
killing two.
Yeah. I've never seen nothing like that.
So, what about this second deer? How did that happen?
Well, I was checking a man's cattle, and up the creek here, and he's from Eagle Lake, Texas, and I was taking care of his cattle up there, and I went up there, and of course the deer season, you know. And I had my gun with me, and so he had a big pond built there, and what I was doing anyway. This deer was just up in the thicket there above that, running out through there.
Huh.
And I saw them big horns, and I started shooting. I shot, I think, it's 9 times at it.
Whatever it takes.
And the last shot I shot, he fell right backwards. He's running fast.
I'll be darned.
He fell backwards, yeah.
I'll be darned.
He's 18 point.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Let me see here. I've got some specific questions here. Well, I remember you telling me about some bear stories. Not necessarily hunting the bears, but when you were walking up the road.
We go to Sunday school all the time, and I had a bypass in 91, wasn't it?
Yeah.
91. But anyway, I was supposed to walk 114 steps a minute. And so, but we'd come back from Sunday school. I'd get out a mile above my house here and start walking to the house. She'd come on, and she'd have my dinner ready when I got here.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, well, I was coming down the road. I looked down the road in front of me. I saw something there. I thought it was one of my cows.
Mm.
And I just kept walking and looking for another one because I had some more. And I looked up again. Well, I saw his bear. Well, I stopped then. I didn't know what to do. I just had that bypass. And I couldn't climb a tree if I wanted to. Of course, it wouldn't have helped any if I had a But anyway, I told him, I said, you get out of there. He's just standing on the road. And he wouldn't move.
Mm.
And I hollered and hollered at him, worked with him about 15 minutes. And he wouldn't do a thing. He just stood there. And I didn't know what to do. And but the fellow from over here at Ozone, he used to come out here and sing at Bedford out here where I go to church. And he told one, put him up a tree. He said, act as brave as you can. So I just thought, well, I'll just see what I can do. I just made four or five steps towards him. And when he did, he just turned his head around like he's going to have to move. Then he straightened back up. I thought, well, what'll I do now? So
you kind of bluff charged him a little bit.
I bluffed him, yeah.
And it didn't work.
It didn't work that time, but I worked with him again, hollered at him and everything else, and he wouldn't move. And so I started again. I said, you get out of there. And so I did that. Well, he went around, and I thought he went up the holler. But I give him a little time to get up the holler. I hear something making a noise, branches up, is in June. Branches up and running, making noise, and he went up out of my sight, and so that's all I knowed. I thought he went on up the holler.
Yeah.
But I gave him time, so I eased on down the road watching for him. I looked, and just about time I got even with him, he was sitting there about 20 steps on me.
Oh, I'll be darned. He just went off the road and just sat there.
Sat there smacking his mouth at me.
Oh, he was popping his teeth at you.
And he was a big one. He was like you talk about that, isn't it?
Yeah.
He had a big one.
Big bear.
Big bear, yeah. I believe he'd weigh 600 pounds.
Wow. Wow.
I thought he would.
Yeah, he probably did.
My eyes may have been a little big, but I thought he would. He was a big one.
Now, do you remember, so the story of the Arkansas black bear is that we had black bear forever.
Yeah.
And then in the, you know, they said by 1940, and this is just an arbitrary date, by 1940, there were no bears left over in this part of Arkansas. That's what they said.
Right. Yep.
And then they started bringing them back in between 1954 and 1964. They traded bass and wild turkey with some states up north and a Canadian province and were bringing bears back in here and turning them loose. Do you remember, was there any talk of that? Or, I mean, do you remember?
I don't remember much about it back then, you know what? I don't.
When did you start seeing bears? Because, I mean, you're in some big-time bear country. I mean, like for Arkansas, like this is about as good a bear country as there is.
Well, I never seen no bear around through here until, we was building Shores Lake. Over, I forgot now what year. That was 54.
Okay.
In 54, well, we saw one. We was going over before daylight, and it one run across the road. I believe that's the first bear.
Is that right? So 1954, you saw a bear?
Yeah.
Well, see, that would have either had to have been one of the bears they turned loose, because that's when they started the reintroduction.
Yeah.
Was in 1954. Or it could have been, and see, here's the deal that I keep going back to, is that I believe that there were still bears over in this part of the world. They said they were extirpated. That means that they were like just a region of this.
Yeah.
They were extinct out of this region. Because my wife's grandfather, he lived down in the Washitas, down around Mena.
Yeah.
And in the 1930s, he killed a bear with a rock. Yeah. Well, he was just a boy. He was walking down a road and saw just a little bear cub. I mean, it wasn't much more than a bear cub. Saw a bear cub run across the road, and he chased it up a tree. And, you know, he's just probably a 12-year-old kid, started chunking rocks at it, and ended up killing this bear. And he was petrified that he had broken the law, you know. And but there weren't supposed to be any bears in that part of the world in the 1930s. And so, anyway, but supposedly there weren't any, but so you saw your first one in 1954.
54, yeah.
I'll be darned. You remember dates really well, don't you?
Yeah. I can remember about anything I ever could.
Yeah. Well, that's good for 91. That's real good.
Yeah. I can hear good, too.
Yeah.
And see good.
Well, you're doing good then.
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
I got a troubled old hip.
Troubled hip. Yeah. From climbing all those bluffs, I guess.
Too many steps.
Too many steps. Well, so you saw a bear in 54.
Yeah.
And then would you say that bear activity has increased around here over the years?
It has since that time. Yep.
Yeah.
Slow, but it's increased. We didn't have any back in here around where I'm at here until the last 6, 7, 8 years.
Okay.
I never seen any back in here.
Yeah. And you're what you're describing is, I mean, you're kind of like in, I mean, you've got cleared land and kind of farm country here.
Yeah.
And so you probably wouldn't see bears in your day-to-day activity, but they've been close to you for a lot longer than that, out in the mountains.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, they've been around, no doubt, but,
yeah,
you know, there's...
You didn't see, they never bothered you much. I mean, you never really had trouble with them.
No.
Maybe a few over the years.
This last fall, there was two stayed right here quite a bit out here. The different ones saw them right here in my field.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I saw them out here one day.
Huh?
So I was on my four-wheeler and was talking to a fellow. I'd been sitting there and talking to him about 15 minutes and I was asking if he saw any deer much out around him, and he lives further on out the mountain. He said, well, not all that many, but we see some occasionally, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what about bear? And he said, well, ain't seen no bear yet.
Right.
But anyway, he's just sitting there. We're sitting there talking. He's at Right Jones, too, right now.
I'll be darned.
He's right there, right close to us.
I'll be darned.
They weigh about 200 pounds apiece.
Wow. Yeah. We were just talking before we started recording that the state record Arkansas bear came from not far from right here. You know,
yeah.
Chad's bear.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some big bears back in here. No, old bears.
Oh.
The bear dad that had the deer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's one that had a young deer out here. One of my neighbors up here.
Is that right?
Seen it. He's had it in his mouth.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Like a fawn? Deer,
yeah.
Fawn?
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
Yep.
You hear about black bear predation on fawns, but
yeah,
rarely do you actually see it. I've never seen
my cattle like tubs and thing. My boy, he went up here to check on my cows, and there's one up there eating out of one of them tubs.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they like that stuff, don't
oh,
they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
They're just a nuisance.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. When did you last hunt? Like, when you, has it been a few years since you've hunted,
well,
I guess?
What, 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
2 years ago, my last hunt was, I didn't hunt. But anyway, I killed two deer.
Okay. You got some for the pot, huh?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Probably right here close. Yep, yeah. That's
good. I don't
know
where to put it on this or not.
Well, hey, there's nothing wrong with killing a deer close to your house.
Yeah, but I don't know where it's at.
Well, that's good.
It wasn't on the road.
Right, right.
It wasn't on the road.
Yeah.
I can tell you about it directly.
Well, you gotta get some meat. Gotta get
yeah.
some meat.
Well, they're handy. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Miss Mary, do you like cooking deer meat? Yeah.
I'll take it over bear.
I'd like to talk to you for a minute on this microphone. Do you have some? Let me get you set up. Is that okay? Yeah, let me see here. Yeah, just put that on. You should be able to hear just fine. There we go. There you go. Can you hear me? Can you hear me good?
Yeah.
Okay. So you like cooking deer meat?
I love deer meat, and I love cooking it because we love deer meat.
Yeah, yeah.
And but now, raw, I mean, like deer roast,
mm-hmm.
it does have a smell. if when you're roasting it, you know. But right. I learned that you could put green peppers or onions, something else with it. And when somebody walks in, they'll smell that smell, the pepper
right.
cooking, and it kind of camouflages this. Because after the deer is cooked, it don't have that. We right. never have had a deer that had a real wild taste.
Yeah.
I mean, we like it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. What's your favorite way to cook deer meat?
Well, I prefer a steak myself, and he likes the hamburger. Of course, I'm getting more to hamburger because you can make chili, meatloaf. There's so many things you can make with ground meat that you can't do with steak, but I like steak, too.
Now, how do you cook your steak? Like on a grill?
I always beat it to make it real
tenderize it.
And then I dip it in flour. And then an egg and milk.
Mm-hmm.
Egg with milk mixed in it. And then back in the flour.
Okay, double batter it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then fry it until it's crisp and, you know, and if it's a young deer, you can cook it in about 5 minutes on each side. But you have to really watch it because if it's not tender, it's the toughest stuff.
It'll be tough.
I have cooked roast before and it'd be too tough and he'd say, I can't eat it. I just turn around and put it back in my pressure cooker.
Yeah.
And cook it a little longer. And then it would get, because I like meat to just, might say, fall off the bone. And if it does, then it's tender.
Now how thick do you cut your steaks?
We always cut our own. Well, we have had some dressed out, but he usually cuts his own steak, and I don't like it cooked. Cut about, not more than really a quarter of an inch thick, which isn't very thick. But I like it because I want it tender, and I get more steak.
Yeah, yeah.
If you cut, now a lot of people like them an inch thick or something like that, but I don't because it's too tough. But I beat it anyway because it makes it more tender.
Right.
And of course, if you take a piece of meat, when you beat it, it makes it get a little bigger. And you'd even take chicken breast and do that. His daughter told me that secret. You can take a chicken breast and beat it, and it'll make it a lot bigger, and it's thinner, and it'll cook quicker.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if I've got time, I like to do that to chicken breast. Anything that you have, if you beat it, it will tenderize it.
Now, do you ever cook any other kind of wild game?
Yeah, I have cooked some bear meat before.
Okay.
And that is really wild tasting.
Okay, you weren't too impressed with the bear meat, huh?
And no, I didn't care. And I'll tell you this, because my brother, he didn't know it. But they come up here, and he had a son that loved hog meat.
Mm.
And I fried hog meat. He'd beg me. He'd say, Aunt Mary, please cook me. And his daddy would get on to him, his mama, too. I said, that's fine. I'd rather cook what he likes. I'd cook one knit day they was coming. So I cooked some deer steak. I put it on one end of the platter, and I cooked some of this hog meat. What do you call it? The shoulder meat. It's fried meat. He loved it.
Yeah.
I've cooked a lot of that. And I cooked some bear meat and put down here. And, of course, they didn't know that I had bear. And you know what they cleaned up first of all? The bear.
The bear. I'll be darned.
And they still, he to this day don't know that he ate bear meat. He wouldn't believe me if I told him today. This wasn't too long back. They killed a bear. And her son-in-law barbecued it. And I'll have to say that you wouldn't know it was bear meat if you wasn't told it was bear meat.
Right. Because
with that barbecue sauce on it, it changed the taste entirely. And we all stopped by after church one Sunday night and had sandwiches out of that barbecued bear meat. And it was good.
It was good. It was good.
And we, every Christmas, my family, my mother's family, no, my dad's family would get together. And we had one of my cousins would take a deer and he'd cook just a young deer and put it on like a smoker and smoke the whole thing and bring that to our dinner. Now, it was good meat smoked. I wish I had a smoker, but I'd probably burn it up trying to smoke it, but it would be good. I mean, smoked meat is really good.
Yes, yes.
And deer meat would be really good smoked if you know, knew the technique. You know, for doing it. And a lot of people makes deer jerky out of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I may, if he ever kills another one, I may try just a little bit. I've got one of them dehydrators.
Now, did you have a big garden, Miss Mary? Were you the gardener?
No.
I remember last time I was here, you probably don't remember it, but you were cooking sweet corn.
Yeah.
And you sent me home with a cooked ear of sweet corn.
Mm-hmm.
Me and my daughter. I remember that. You had it in foil. You were cooking it somehow. But do you have a garden out here usually?
Oh, yeah.
We usually have a garden. We had a pretty
Okay. So you raised some corn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we put it, well, in fact, we practically done the whole patch in one day because he didn't know it was ready. And he went down there and said, I tell you, this was Saturday, wasn't it? And I said, you can't be telling me. He said, well, it's ready. He said, I'm afraid it won't keep till Monday. I said, well, we'll just have to stay up tonight and get it cooked out. So we cooked it out, and I lined it out on my table to cool and left it out all night with under fans for it to cool out. And I got up real early the next morning and wrapped it all up in tinfoil so we could put it away.
Oh, so you cook it and then freeze it in tinfoil? And then how do you reheat it?
I cook it for 5 minutes when it gets to a boil. I let my water get to a boil. And I put the corn in, and when it's boiling real good, I time it for 5 minutes. I take it out, run it through just tap water to kind of chill it.
Yeah.
And then I put it in ice water and leave it till it kind of chills down. Then I put it out to drain, and then I just stack it out on the table and let it lay there till it gets cold enough that I know it's not, the cob, because it'll be cold out here, but if you're not careful, the cob will still be hot, and then it will spoil. So you have to. So that's the reason I put it on fans. What we used to when I had a coffee table in here, I'd put a sheet on the coffee table. We'd turn the air conditioner on and put the corn all on the table here, and it'd cool out just fine.
And then you'd freeze it, and then you'd pull it out of the freezer and just heat it up.
Yeah, I would just take it out, put it back
and
in water,
eat it,
and
just
boil
like
it.
Corn on the cob.
Yeah.
Okay. So you didn't even have to cook it. You just kind of had to heat it up. Had some last night for supper. I'll be darned.
Our grandson and our son both. If he comes in, if he's not hungry, if you better not mention corn, because he says if I'm not hungry, I can eat corn, and he'll go get him a roast in here. He said, "Don't blame corn, because I don't need it, but he want to have a roast in here." But everybody loves, and we had a boy here one time, my daughter tell him, said, can you eat corn on the cob? Yeah. She got in an argument with him. She said, no, you can't eat corn on the cob. I know I can. I'll have mama to cook some. You going to show me you can eat corn on the cob. He ate that corn. She said, you didn't eat that corn on the cob. I did do it. She said, you did not. You ate the corn off that cob. And oh, he got so mad because he saw she had him over a barrel.
Yeah,
but he could eat corn on the cob.
I'm going to remember that one. Miss Mary, do you have any good stories about Mr. Ori and his hunting or anything that he hadn't said?
Well, I remember.
Not to embarrass him.
I remember one time we had two of the grandchildren here, and I'd got up early because he gets up early if he goes hunting, and I'd got up early and got him off hunting. And it wasn't, in fact, I don't think we hadn't even got up yet. And he come in, he said, y'all got to get ready, you've got to go help me. And I thought, no, he's got a deer. And so we took the four-wheeler, took the two grandkids, and down in the holler we went. He's wanting us to find it, see it.
Mm.
And we got down there, and then we had to load that on the four-wheeler. And those grandkids had a blast. They got to help Grandpa bring him in a deer.
Mm.
And then we brought that deer up here, and I remember that was a real exciting time. And then we had another grandson up here. He'd went up here to check his cows, and luckily he found a deer. So he come home and said, y'all's got to go help me. Well, I knew immediately what he had done. So we took this little feller up there, and we went up in the woods. He wanted him to find it. He kind of pointed it to me where it was at. He wanted to see if he could find it. He kept telling him, said, Ethan, look around. Said, that deer's got to be here somewhere. And, of course, he knew all the time where it was. And you ought to saw that little feller helping us drag that out. He was thought he was really doing something. We put him in front, and me and him was behind, kind of dragging it. But he really was helping get that deer out of the woods.
That's a lot of fun.
Oh,
Miss Mary,
is.
How old are you? Do you mind me asking you that?
I'm 79.
Okay.
Approaching 80. We'll be next month.
Okay.
His daughter and I have the same birthday.
Oh, okay.
And my daughter, I'm 20 years older than his daughter, and I'm 30 years older than my daughter. And my grandson is got married this year, and we're expecting our first great grandbaby.
Okay.
From my daughter's family. This month.
Okay.
About the 29th. So I'm just counting the days down.
Yeah.
So I'm real excited about that. That'll make us nine great grandchildren.
Okay. Okay, we talked about your big bucks. We talked about your bear story. We talked about growing up in the Ozarks, talked about your first introductions to hunting. You told me about a little bit about your childhood. What would you say, what are your most, I mean, you've really never, you've never known much than the life that you've lived out here. And the reason that I'm here is because I don't think you probably even realize how unique it is the way that you have lived in today's world. I mean, just like you said, there's, thank you. Like you said, people don't live out here anymore. There used to be more people that lived out here.
Oh, yeah.
And most people end up migrating into the city. What made you want to stay out here and just keep the lifestyle that you have lived?
I never did go nowhere else. Then one thing, I took care of my mother here for 24 years.
Okay, so she was up here.
She was here with me. Yeah. 24 years, and her home was right up here. She's raised, and
yeah,
and she'd never hardly been nowhere else.
Yeah. So you just never had a reason to leave.
No reason to leave.
I
made a living here, and I
no plans to leave now.
No. This go
your,
up.
Does your boy? That's right. Does your boy live out here close?
He lives at Winslow.
Okay.
He's a pastor in church out here at Bidwell.
Okay, he's pastor in the church out there. Yeah. Can you think of any other unique stories about your life that you'd like to share?
Well,
tell him about hunting. He shot the water.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, me and my brother, we was hunting one night. Dog treed. And we went up there and he's treed up under a rock. We went and built up a fire and smoked the coon out. Caught it.
Mm.
And his dog wasn't there. So we wondered where he was at. He didn't ever show up. And so on about 30, 40 minutes while we hear him barking way on top of the mountain.
Hmm.
And so we went up there we went up there and there's two coons up a tree.
Hmm.
And so we got both of them, come back over the hill, come back down there and whiz. Coming over that hill, always steep. And he looked down there and he said, "There's a light down yonder." I said, "I wonder who in the world that is." And I said, "Don't know what they're up to." So he said, "You stay right here and keep these coons and things." I said, "I'm going down here and see." And so he went down pretty close and I heard him talking. And he said, "If you don't tell who you are, they never would answer him, you know. So if you don't tell who you are, I'm going to shoot your light out." So directly, kapow, he took, and he shot in the water. He was just right there.
I'll be darned.
I thought that was one of them.
So he was seeing the reflection of his own light.
No, it was a star shining in it.
The star shining.
Shining down in the,
man,
in the light. And
hey, that's some old school coon hunting right there.
Yeah.
Go. Somebody won't tell you who they are, you're going to shoot their light out.
Yeah.
You know, I guess back in those days, I mean, you just didn't see people. I mean, it was probably really odd that you felt like you saw a light.
You hardly ever. You wouldn't write, like I said. I wouldn't think about sending this boy down this holler here now. Bear like they are, people like they are.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No way. No.
Wow, that's a unique story.
Yeah. Yeah, you wouldn't think about a child being out now. You better keep your eye on them all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
They're doing away with them across the border and everything else.
Yeah.
Hundreds of them.
Yeah.
We don't hear about it a lot, but they are out.
Yeah. That was a good story, Miss Mary. Can you think of any other unique stories, just about your whole life, not even about hunting?
Well, after I quit growing, after I quit sawmilling, I started growing chickens. And I grew chickens for 43 years.
Mm. Yeah. Just right here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, I never moved off right here. Stayed right here.
Yeah.
43 years.
43 years. Well, I'd like to see your old mule harnesses. before I leave today?
Well, I got one hornet up here, all I got left.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of it, I don't remember just what.
Right.
Yeah.
Tell him your new story about us doing the operation on that deer you got in the hay field.
The operation of the deer in the hay field?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was mowing hay and I cut a little deer's foot off and I called her to come get it because I know that, you know, it never make it with a leg off.
Right.
This little baby that way. So we right down, we raised it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had a pet deer for?
Oh, I had two or three pet deer, yeah.
Huh.
I had three.
Huh.
I've had three.
At different times?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a buck, kept him here about 11 years.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm.
Did he get very big? Did he get big horns?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Big horns.
Yeah. Oh, that's neat. You know, we had a pet deer, too. Just like 3 years ago, it became illegal in Arkansas to have captive wild caught deer.
Right.
But for years, it was totally fine.
It was all right, yeah.
Yeah, and we had three different deer that we raised that the kids, I mean, their childhood has memories of them having those deer that we raised, and that was really neat. But, well, hey, we've been talking for an hour. That's good. That's about how long I wanted to talk with you.
Yeah, okay.
But thank you for letting me come out here.
Well, you're just welcome as can be. I could tell you a lot of stories.
Well, don't hold them back if you got one. But no, I there's not a lot of people that are still around that grew up and lived the way that you did. And I knew you were a good hunter. Mo Shepherd is the one that introduced me to you years ago. And I knew you were a good hunter and loved hunting. And that's what this podcast is about.
Yeah.
You know, this is a hunting podcast, and so I always like to go hear stories of the way things used to work, and it's always really interesting. You know, because today we have more bear, more deer, more wildlife than we've had in recorded history, really.
Right, yeah.
And it's pretty amazing because it's 2019, the modern world is exploding in population growth and wild places are shrinking, you know, as people move out. Just we're making more room for more people.
Right.
You know, there's less and less wild places. And that's what to me is so unique about the Ozarks is that we've got all this national forest, which will forever be in public hands and not be, or at least we hope, will not be changed from just its native state like it is right now.
Right.
And anyway, it's pretty neat that wildlife conservation has come as far as it has. You know, even talking to you from the 1930s and 40s when there weren't deer, there weren't bear, there weren't wild turkeys. I mean, it was like, that was kind of like a wildlife desert.
Right.
I mean, if you look at it as a chunk of time, that was a tough time to be at, I mean, for wildlife,
tough
time. And then now there's deer. I'm surprised we didn't see a deer in your yard when we pulled up. I mean, there's a lot of game around.
Oh, yeah. Way back yonder, I don't know. Well, it's back in the early 30s, I'll say, or before that. They had deer here.
Okay, so there were some.
Yeah, there was some here because I heard my mother talk about it. Her sister's husband killing deer.
Okay.
Yeah, way back yonder.
Yeah. Yeah.
And bear too.
Okay.
Yeah. But there wasn't bear like there. They wasn't as many like there are now, but they was,
right.
There's a few run across. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, now they just lived on little spots here and yonder. When I went to school at Bedford here, they was 87 children.
Mm.
Now it's just consolidated, moved out.
Oh, wow. So there were 87 kids back in here.
Yeah, I went to school with 87.
Heck, there's probably not five kids that live back here now, is there? Maybe more than that.
They don't even run a bus out here no more.
Really?
Right.
Wow. People just don't live here anymore, do they?
Well, there's some live out there, but they quit raising children.
Yeah.
No families.
Yeah.
But everybody back then had good big families.
Yeah.
But there's
now you're closest. Like, where do you do your shopping? You go into Fayetteville and West Fork.
Yeah, Fayetteville, West Fork, and Mountainburg.
Okay, so now, you're about 30, 40 minutes. How far a drive?
Yeah. Here to West Fork, about 40 minutes.
About 40 minutes.
Yeah. Of course, they got a dollar store now at Winslow.
Yeah. You can get a few things there, huh?
Yeah, and at Mountainburg down here, too.
Yeah.
Of course, my children, they all went to school Mountainburg.
Went to school Mountainburg.
Yeah.
Okay.
No bananas at Mountainburg.
No.
Well, hey, thanks so much for having us out here. And I'll just close down the podcast. Closing comment. Do you have a closing comment you want to say to all these hunters that are listening to this, Mr. Ory?
Well, I like to see a hunter that is honest and won't violate the law.
Mm-hmm.
I abide by it pretty close. I won't hardly ever kill a doe deer.
Yeah.
Because that's the population of her herd.
Right.
I just don't do that. I know I don't hunt on Sunday.
Okay.
I never hunt a day in my life on Sunday.
Mm. Yep.
Nope, I was taught against it.
Thanks for listening to the Bear Hunting Magazine podcast. And keep the wild places wild, because that's where the bears live.
Yeah. Well, we'll try to do that, but them bear, I don't like to get around too close to me. I've never killed one.
We've got to keep them thinned down. That's why we got to hunt them a little bit.
I've never shot at one. Let me tell you this before you close up. I was around here putting out nitrate. I got 40 acres back around the hill here. And I started working. I just got through putting a ton of nitrate out. And scattering it behind my tractor and a seed sower. And I was shaking the last three sacks out to pour in my spreader. And I looked down the lower side of the field and I saw a big old scimitar something down there. Mm. I thought it was one of my neighbor's bulls.
Right, scimitar bull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got looking at it and it ain't either. And I got looking, there's a bear, a big old scimitar bear. And I believe it weighed 650, 700 pounds.
Wow.
He was a monster.
Mm.
And he stood way up high as this ceiling here. He was a big one. Mm. But he sat there, or stand there, and he'd take that paw, I got to watch, and eating that hop clover.
I'll be darned.
I didn't know what to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
But they do that.
I'll be darned.
But I was starting about 40 yards of him.
Mm.
He just
big one.
Right.
Big red-colored cinnamon bear, yeah.
Yeah, that's 91, I guess it was.
91.
When that was, yeah.
I'll be darned.
But he was a big one. I don't know anybody ever killed him or not.
Mm.
I just don't know. They live about 30 years, you know, or older.
Yeah. They can live a long time.
Yeah.
A lot longer than a deer.
Yeah. I sure appreciate you coming down and talking to me.
My pleasure.
Maybe somebody will get a kick out of this old country boy.
I think they will.
Yeah.
I think they will.
Sweet
chariot
coming for to carry me home. Sweet low, sweet chariot coming for to carry me home. I looked over Jordan, and what did I see? Coming for to carry me home. A band of angels are coming after me. Coming for to carry me home. Swing low. Chariot coming for to carry me home. Sweet low, sweet chariot coming for to carry me home. If you get there
before I do, coming for to carry me home to all my friends. I'm coming to, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home.